Here is what we learn from the Clive Barker Archive. Clive Barker is a visionary fantasist, poet, and painter who has expanded the reaches of human imagination as a novelist, director, screenwriter, and dramatist, an inveterate seeker who traverses between myriad styles with ease. Barker has left his indelible artistic mark on a range of projects that reflect his creative grasp of contemporary media, from familiar literary terrain to the progressive vision of his Seraphim production company. The 1998 movie Gods and Monsters, which he executive produced, garnered 3 Academy Award nominations and an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay. The following year, Barker joined the ranks of such illustrious authors as Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Annie Dillard, and Aldous Huxley when his collection of literary works was inducted into the perennial line at HarperCollins, which then published The Essential Clive Barker, a 700-page anthology. He began his odyssey before that in the theaters of London and Liverpool, scripting original plays. Soon, Barker began publishing the Books of Blood short fiction collections, but it was his debut novel, The Damnation Game, that widened his already growing international audience. Barker shifted gears in 1986 when he directed Hellraiser, based on his novella The Hellbound Heart, which became a veritable cult classic on its release the following year, spawning a slew of sequels, several lines of comic books, and an array of merchandising. In 2012, Barker was given a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Horror Writers Association for his outstanding contribution to the genre. In a talk at UCLA about one of his early plays, Barker explained, "Subtle Bodies dramatizes the complexities and confusion of affection, and the story is predicated upon a series of problematical relationships. The way these passions, whether failed, frenzied, or simply foolish, shape the behavior of the characters is at the heart of the play. The fantasy elements are simply entertaining methods of revelation. Subtle Bodies takes some of its formal design from English farce, the cast of disparate characters converging on a hotel over one calamitous day and night, the manic concealing of secrets and the inevitable humiliations when the plots these people have laid against one another unravel. But to this familiar mix, I added a few wilder elements of my own, chief amongst them the politely anarchic person of Edward Lear, whose romantic nonsense poem, The Owl and the Pussycat, had been a favorite from childhood. This play, Subtle Bodies, is a dream play, a comedy of altered stages in which images that have been shaped by private rages, frustrations, and desires of the characters take public, or at least semi-public, form. On occasion, these dream images seep almost unnoticed into the real world of the play, like the sand that is constantly blowing in under the doors of the Atlantic Hotel where the story is laid. At other times, they supplant that world entirely, the most spectacular example of which occurs in the third act when the hotel becomes a ship and sails off into the night on what is to be its final voyage. Actors Circle in Scranton is presenting a production of Subtle Bodies that will continue this weekend at Providence Playhouse. Justin Costello saw the show in New York some years ago and never forgot its impact. He and more than 20 actors and crew members are bringing the dream world to life. And actor Marcy Reby, who is the stage manager too, stopped in to introduce us to the play.
Clive Barker is known mostly for his films. He's the creator of Hellraiser and the writer of Candyman and also Nightbreed and Lord of Illusions. He's also a major painter, so people in the art world would know him. And he's also a novelist. And he's a best-selling New York Times novelist for decades and one of the premier horror writers of the last century. And when he first premiered, it was Stephen King said that I've seen the future of what horror is. And his name is Clive Barker. Now, before he segued into all of that, he was an experimental playwright and director in Liverpool, England. And one of the last plays he wrote was Subtle Bodies in 1982, and it premiered in 1983. And a lot of what would later show up in different variations in his later works have their premiere in this play. So it's kind of an honor to be bringing it to Northeastern Pennsylvania after it had its U.S. premiere that I saw in New York back in 1998, and I fell in love with it.
It's one of those bucket list things?
It has been a bucket list, but because of what is required for the set and the staging and a cast of over 20, normally, and obviously it's something that Intrepidus can't do. You know, we do tight, intimate, tiny, compressed Greek and original works. And so when I saw theater like the Providence Playhouse that's owned and run by Actor Circle, and I saw that there was a balcony and that there was this huge stage, I thought, let me see what I could do. And I told Marcy the first day we went there, because we ended up doing another production there, and I was like, oh my God, Marcy, Subtle Bodies could be done here. And so on a whim, I made the proposal, and now we're off and rolling with it.
Marcy, what is Justin saying when he's talking about the setting and the stage and what's required for this?
I think it has the most props that Justin has ever used.
There's more props in this than Streetcar Named Desire. And if you know Streetcar Named Desire, you know the crazy props in that play. And also, it takes place at a hotel in the northwest coast of England in the fall. And it's also a dream play and surreal. And the entire hotel has to somehow turn into a ship cruising the Arctic Ocean for the entire third act.
And it's got farcical elements, too.
Oh, it's very farcical, yeah. Yeah, it's a comedy of all eras,
right,
you know?
Right.
And you're not kidding about the number of cast members required?
It's a herd. There are so many that you needed the space to maneuver all of them and to give them all moments to shine.
And I'm still not sure how we're going to fit them all backstage. We'll be in the hallway.
You can't move. You have to stay here.
And lots of costumes.
There's just
a lot going on in the play.
In addition to the comedy, then, what is the spooky part?
Those who know Clive Barker will know that one of the themes that he keeps going to, and one of an image that he keeps talking about, especially in his appropriate books of art series, it's called Quiddity. It's the dream sea. And in a normal human like ourselves, we would visit this sea three times. Once when we're born, once when we fall in love, and once right before we die. But there are other people and other supernatural people who can cross into its waves and explore whenever they can. Half the cast is part of what's called the dream technicians. They're supernatural, who basically all work at or populate this hotel. And it's a collective dream that is formed. And it's in pure Barker style. It brings about people's hidden desires, hidden, let's say, bigotry, and hate and rage. And everything that is the subtle body, which is what the purpose of this is we keep that hidden. You know, we have the facades in our day-to-day life of, okay, this is how we act appropriately. This is what we need to say and do. We have laws. We have commandments, if you're religious. What happens when you sleep? We sleep and dream about things that we can't tell the waking world. Things that we could do and take pleasure in that are outside of the bounds of what is right and wrong. And what happens when all of that's exposed to the people who are supposed to be closest to you and that you most want to impress? And then what are the ramifications of that? You know, and it deals with being in the early 80s. It deals with one's sexuality, sexual identity, religion, which are all kind of themes of Barker's work throughout. And yes, it's structured after the farce with the characters and the fact that here's this wedding, this couple that are going to be married. On the eve of their wedding, they escape and run to this hotel to sort things out, only to be followed by the entire wedding party, crashing. And you think, okay, this is comedy, you know, in and of itself, because everyone is just kind of heightened. And you can look at it that way, but when you start to look at it and what it explores, once the facade and the laughter is there, what bubbles beneath and what's explored and exposed is very dark. And like all Barker, it not afraid to go there.
And Marcia, what have you taken on as a role?
This is my first time stage managing an adult production, so that's pretty exciting for me because it's a challenge. There's a lot of people and a lot of moving parts. And then I also play Mrs. Makata, who's in charge of the Dream Bureau.
She's like the Anna Wintour of dreams. Like if you took Titania from Midsummer, Nyx and from the fairy world, no one can compare to Makata and her parasol.
It's great. I don't want to give it away.
It's period dress, then?
It's a time out of time.
Time out of time, a stylized. You know, we always said that the setting is almost like a dream setting. And a lot of the colors and the characters and the lighting and a lot of the imagery, I use Dali. Because when you look at Dali, the surrealism of Dali, everything's all over the place. And yet everything has so many layers to uncrack. And so you have people like, in some of Dali's work, you have people from different times and different even types of style of art in the same painting. And that's kind of what we do here. So it's a mix of time and place. And basically all costumes are character-based.
You talk about dreams and what we suppress during the day. And it sounds id-like. It sounds Freudian to a certain degree. Is it?
One of the main characters or major characters is the Freudian dream gorilla. So that it is definitely. And the gorilla is one of the characters who should stay in dreams. But because the gorilla has been conjured by the character of Edward Lear, who's a nonsense poet who died in the late 1800s and is now part of the Bureau and spends the summer haunting the Atlantic Hotel under the name of his favorite deceased cat, Foss. And Lear is the type of character who he doesn't want to be in the Bureau anymore. And he can't really conjure things up again. He's losing his imagination. And so the gorilla that was once in his dream has now come out into the reality and is now, even when he's awake, the gorilla is taunting him. So very much so. And if you know anything about, you know, Edward Lear, he's a man who had many secrets during his life. So, yes, it's very Freudian.
When we say farce, Marcy, we often think of physicality, theater that is physical.
It definitely plays in. There's several fights. There's a lot of people who have big personalities and let that come through. We have doorways, like lots of farces have, which I think also plays into that.
The structure very much, there's four acts, but there's only one intermission after act two. And with the amount of people coming in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, and the physicality, you know, there's conga lines, including 10 to 12 people, including the gorilla. You know, there's moments on sea where everyone is trapped in lifeboats and have to recreate being on the Arctic Ocean.
When they're all in a costume dress
from
a costume party.
There's a costume party. No one gets along in this. And so the physicality of that has been challenging too.
When you mention a conga line, then is there some music integrated into the...
Oh, yeah. As with everything, even though this is an actor's production, I was able to bring some of my elements into it. So there is a ton of music. I used a lot of underscoring. Of course, you can't have a conga line without conga music. But being the fact that it does have much more comedic moments, the music used is timely. It's very important. Whereas with other shows, it's like, okay, the music, then the silence is going to be the important part. Here, it's kind of like music is an accentuation of the emotional undertow of the piece.
If we think about a piece like Rocky Horror, there is a couple and they are innocent and they are showing up at a place that is a castle and there's a party underway. We know the premise of that. And they undergo a journey and all kinds of things. What happens with this wedding couple?
They definitely go through a change. They're definitely dynamic characters who have to really look at the secrets that they have, not only with regard to themselves or to each other, but with the rest of the people involved in the wedding party to decide what do they want their life to be when they're gone.
And unlike most farces, you know, you think of Ernest, you think of other, those wrap themselves up neat and tidy. Barker refuses to do that. So almost everyone is drastically changed by the end of this play, but it's not neat and tidy and it's not expected. So what you think will happen won't happen. But they will never think about what happened at the Atlantic Hotel and not realize that this has affected us and changed us for who we are completely.
And so written when it was, and you gave us a sense of what the themes might have been around there, those same elements speak to us today?
Definitely.
I think louder today. You know, we're coming up with the booming 70s, and in the 80s, you had, you know, the booming punk rock. And, you know, this is very much in that wheelhouse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you look at today's culture, the vitriol and the attacks that are now allowed to happen to other people for being what's considered other, it's rampant today. And this very much deals with that. And you could look at some of the actions that happen in this show and how these characters turn on each other. And because it's in a farce, because it's a genre, you know, he calls it fantastique, which is a combination of everything. You could laugh with them. But then if you actually think about, oh my gosh, what does this mean? You realize, I shouldn't be laughing, should I?
Right, because you see people that you've heard about or know that might espouse some of these terrible things that these people are, and like how they react with each other. You could see that every day. And yeah, I think it's definitely a timely piece. Doesn't matter that it was written in the early 80s. It's still a factor.
Justin Costello, who is directing the current show at Actors Circle in Scranton, Subtle Bodies by Clive Barker. And also we heard from actor Marcy Reby, who is stage manager of the production. And this is noted as the Pennsylvania premiere of Clive Barker's Subtle Bodies. It will be presented this coming weekend, the 10th, 11th, and 12th, at Providence Playhouse, 1256 Providence Road in Scranton. Showtimes Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 7, Sundays at 2. For more information online, actorscircle.com. The production is presented through a grant from the Lackawanna County for Arts and Culture. And again, it's Subtle Bodies by Clive Barker in its Pennsylvania premiere. And that's directed by Justin Costello with stage managing done by Marcy Reby, our guests today on Art Scene. And the shows will be the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th at Providence Playhouse, 1256 Providence Road in Scranton. And evening shows at 7 and a Sunday matinee at 2. ActorsCircle.com, ActorsCircle.com.